Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Remember the last time? We told you not to feed them after midnight. We told you to keep them away from the light. And the most important warning of all, we told you to never, ever get them wet. You didn't listen.
Hello and welcome to Rewatchability. It's a podcast on the Entertainment One Podcast Network. I'm Robert Larone. With me, as always, is
J.M. McNabb.
And we're here to talk about a very special movie, I think. It's a gonzo movie. It's crazy. It's one of the craziest studio films probably ever made. And it's also a sequel to a really great movie. But before we get into that, we should thank our Patreons. Those are the people who give us a little bit of money each month. Could be one, could be three, could be $5. And that helps us keep the podcast going, helps us keep the lights on. It helps us out. And in return, you get the podcast early, as well as some special bonus content. And you can do that at patreon.com/rewatchability. So, we are talking about Gremlins 2. It's a crazy movie. It's a big...
Whoa, whoa, whoa. That's what? Not the whole title. You've got to say Gremlins 2, colon...
Right, okay. Gremlins 2, colon, The New Batch.
Thank you.
Directed by Joe Dante, with a slight assist by Chuck Jones, and starring Zach Galligan, Phoebe Cates, and, of course, Gizmo. And this was the sequel to the huge phenomenon that was Gremlins. And, you know, it came out a little bit later. It was really off the wall. It didn't fare quite as well, but it had a special place in my heart. What about you, Jam? When was the first time that you saw Gremlins 2, The New Batch?
Oh, man. I was trying to remember this because I don't totally remember. I think I almost went back and listened to the episode we did about Gremlins years ago because I was like, when did I watch? Because I think I saw Gremlins 2 first.
Oh, really?
I think so. But I didn't see it in the theater. I think I saw it when it first came out on VHS. Because I would have been like a baby when Gremlins came out. And right. It hadn't been quite adopted as like the seasonal favorite that it has been today, the first Gremlins. So I think like, and I remember there being a lot of hype around Gremlins 2. Mm-hmm. Like I remember the commercials. Maybe I'm misremembering, but I feel like there was a bit on America's Funniest Home Videos where like the Gremlins stopped by or something. Maybe
Bob
that was a
Saget.
Dream. Yeah, I think they murdered Bob Saget. I think that was the joke. So for me, like, I think when I think about what a Gremlins movie is, I kind of think of this movie. I kind of think more the zaniness and the like absurdity. And when I go back and watch the first one, which I do from time to time, I saw it the last Christmas that theaters were widely open. I went and saw it at a rep theater. Yeah.
Oh,
and
man.
The first time I saw it on the big screen, and it was great. And But every time I go back to the first Gremlins, I am surprised by, you know, how dark it gets. And I know it's famous for being, you know, one of the movies that helped prompt the MPAA to create PG-13. Like, I know that, but still, I'm always surprised by how kind of grim the first movie is, because I think this was my introduction to, like, the tone of Gremlins, if that makes sense. This feels right when I watch this one.
Right.
But okay. What about you? Because you suggested this. This must be... I basically said to you, you pick the movie. We can do whatever you want.
Oh, man. I had some thoughts. Some movies passed through my mind. I thought about just maybe torturing you, because I know there are some movies that, you know, we might not love to revisit. But, you know, I thought this
was
one...
Like what? What were you going to torture me with?
Oh, I don't know. Now I can't think of anything. But... it was a big movie for me, and the Gremlins franchise was a big franchise for me. And I wasn't on the Gremlins podcast that you recorded many years ago. I think that was when I was in Vancouver briefly. So I never got to talk about all of my Gremlins feelings. So this is me. I'm going to get them all out right now. Like, I love Gremlins. And I guess part of it was that, like, I, at a very young age, like as a toddler, was given a Gizmo Stuffy, that was like my thing. That was my friend while I was like forming feelings and, you know. So it was, I thought that this was like a kid's thing. I just thought it was like a normal part of life. And then there were these like read-along books the cassette tape, and you had those. And yeah, like that gets into the sort of horror of the Gremlins, which is what the title is, Gremlins. But even that, I mean, it was sort of acceptable for kids.
I don't think it was like, even though this movie came out 6 years after the original, like it didn't seem to me as a kid like it had been that long in a way, because Gremlins, there was so much Gremlins merchandise, so much stuff circulating in the world. Because even when they stopped, you know, selling it in stores, if they did, which I'm sure they did, but like I even remember in the late 80s or whenever, I would be going to like garage sales and finding, you know, Gremlins stuff because it had been so big just a few years earlier. So I just remember Gremlins still being around and still being a thing when 2 came out, even though it maybe had in terms of like the broader culture, it had been a while. Maybe not everyone was thinking about Gremlins, but it was more on my mind. And I think I was still scared of it, too. Like, that's the other thing. It did seem scary when I saw it.
Well, once I saw the movies, I mean, the first one really did scare me. I definitely was afraid of that movie, but also delighted, of course. And the second one I just thought was a lot of fun. I might even have seen the second one before I saw the first one. They're all sort of jumbled in my mind. But I do remember loving it and just like loving the zaniness of it and loving how cartoonish it was. And it was just so up my alley as a kid. I mean, there was, you know, just images coming at you from everywhere. It was very exciting. And it was one of my favorite movies, hands down, when I was a kid. And it didn't occur to me until later how like, dark and scary and kind of like fucked up some of the things in these movies are. But I guess I turned out fine.
You don't eat after midnight.
No. But yeah, I mean, those are, you know.
And you haven't showered in years. But that's unrelated.
But imagine if I did. Can you imagine, like, you know, 12 to 15 of me, you know, multiple variations, one with like a little mohawk? Bad news.
Yeah.
But I hadn't seen it in a long time. And because, it's not a seasonal favorite. Gremlins 2 hadn't come up in my life. But I recently, I can't remember where, but I re-saw the Key and Peele sketch.
Oh, yeah.
The Gremlins 2 sketch, which is hilarious.
I don't see that the Gremlin design is broken.
It's called brainstorming, not brain drizzling, sweet pea. Okay? Shut your mouth for a second. Look, here's the thing. None of this is final.
So you mean, like, what if there was, like, a brainy gremlin?
A brainy gremlin.
You talking about a gremlin with glasses who could talk and sing New York, New York? That's brilliant. It's in the movie done.
Whoa, you said that nothing was final.
That was before I heard the words brainy and gremlin in the same sentence together. It's done. I love it. It's in the movie next.
And, I thought it'd be a great movie to talk about. And I guess they are working on a Gremlins 3 as well.
Well, they've been talking about that for a long time. I don't. Well, one true. Thing that is for sure happening is there's like an animated prequel series.
There is, yeah.
Coming out, yeah.
That's right. And it takes place in like China.
Yeah. They're,
it has B.D. Wong.
They're going to try to, I'm imagining, like, retroactively fix some of the more problematic elements of the story.
They have a lot of work to do.
Yeah. Well, should we get into the rundown?
Let's do it. So, Gremlins 2, it takes place after the events of the first Gremlins, sometime after the events of the first Gremlins movie. Now, Billy has grown up a little bit more, and he and his girlfriend, played by Phoebe Cates, have moved to the Big Apple, New York City, and they're living that big city life. But, you know, it's not all easy. He feels like he should have been promoted, and they're working at this, like, really crappy corporate building called Clamp Industries or Clamp whatever. And this was one thing that I didn't remember about Gremlins 2. Is that one of the characters is very much based on Donald fucking Trump. And, I mean, that's always a weird thing to see.
Well, you know, I think that was... it's funny you say that because I remember people talking about it, like, when he was elected. Like,
oh, yeah?
Being like, hey, this is crazy. He was, you know, the guy in Gremlins. And... you know, I knew that going in, but I haven't watched this movie in years, and I know, like, Joe Dante hates Donald Trump. Like, I do sometimes listen to his podcast, so I get, you know, I feel like I get updates from Joe Dante on a regular basis, and you know, I know that politically he hates Trump.
Not a
so,
fan.
I'm sure would he to make a movie with a Trump analog today, it would be much different because he kind of gets let off the hook a little bit in this movie because it's
he has a redemption story.
He has kind of a redemption story, and he's played by John Glover, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the actor, and he's an amazing actor.
He's
love
great.
John Glover. He's obviously in Scrooge. I think he's the voice of the Riddler in Batman the Animated Series. Like he's fantastic, and he's just so like. He plays the part is more like a bumbling kind of billionaire. Mm-hmm. He's not overtly evil. He's just kind of clueless and
yeah.
So I just think it you can see how it's inspired by Trump, but I don't think they really go for like. I was almost disappointed that they didn't actually like attack the root of sort of 80s business sleaze like they could have.
I mean, they sort of. Do a bit, but they don't get into his like filthy luxury, you know, gold toilet baloney. But he's also, it's not solely based off Trump, we should say. He's also part Ted Turner, who, you know, I'm sure he's not like a perfect guy, but he did give us Captain Planet, so got to give
him that.
That's
true. Yeah. And there's a very specific dig at Ted Turner when they mention. There's a joke about like how he colorizes movies at one point.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a blend. But even just like in terms of like attacking like 80s consumerism, I think that by the end they do kind of pull their punches a little bit. But we'll get into that. I do want to mention the very beginning because talking about like how Gremlins has like the basic story of it has this orientalist vibe to it where it's literally an old Chinese man in a shop with a magic creature and they solve that problem in this movie by mysteriously killing him immediately.
Which
I don't know if that's better or worse because it's weird because they want to buy his shop, like the Clamp character wants the property and they go and he won't sell it. And then they're like, Robert Picardo, who's like his right-hand man, is like, well, he was coughing a lot. He'll probably be dead. Let's just wait it out. And then 6 weeks later, they're like, yep, he's dead.
Yeah. What did you
he's
know,
never
Robert
mentioned
Picardo?
Again.
He should have helped him. He's a holographic doctor. It's a violation of his Hippocratic Oath. But so, his shop closes down. I mean, this is a story of gentrification, which is why it's specifically about Trump in, like, the 80s. He's, like, the big developer who is, like, closing down things and opening, you know, all these, like, gaudy shitty buildings. But so, yeah, they want to close down his place. And they do close it down. And poor Gizmo, who, as you remember from the first Gremlins movie, was repossessed by Mr. Wing. He sort of has to escape the demolition. And he goes running and he is picked up by one of the guys who works at the genetics lab in the Clamp building. He's played by these twins. And it's the guy from Terminator 2 who's the cop with the coffee. And then Robert Patrick turns into him. And that's how they do it. Twins.
So, yeah, he can only get roles where he plays either twins or someone who's a shapeshifter.
That's right.
Copies him.
Can you imagine, like, one guy just wants to strike out on his own? He keeps,
right.
The other brother keeps bringing these lucrative twins offers. He's like, no, I want to be my own man. You're going to say no to Joe Dante? You can say no to James Cameron?
They're rebooting Parent Trap, but with two middle-aged men. It's perfect for us.
Yeah. But so that's all in the Clamp building. I mean, everything is in this building. The genetic splicing laboratory is not even related to the Trump character. It's a completely different thing. It's just a rental. And that's
right.
Run by Christopher Lee as Dr. Catheter, which is that's kind of funny. It's a thing that goes in your penis if you're in the hospital. So
that's true.
Hello, Doctor.
How's the cloning work coming along?
Really well, Doctor.
Lewis?
Say, Doctor, we've got something we want you to take a look at. I think you'll find it interesting. I found it downtown on one of my specimen scouts. It's some sort of rodent, apparently, and it seems to be allergic to bright light.
Cute, isn't it?
That may be genetic.
We're not sure yet.
Oh, no, we're not sure.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's one thing I love about Joe Dante. And I love a lot of things about Joe Dante. But, like, when he casts these movie icons who maybe weren't getting the best jobs around that time. I mean, this movie's full of great old actors who show up in weird bit parts. But maybe the most prominent of them here is Christopher Lee.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But so Billy, he's just working this graphic design job at the Clamp Industries. And, you know, he has a boss who is sort of into him, but he has a girlfriend. And his job is, like, really tedious to him. Like, they tell him to put trees on his drawing, and there's not going to be any trees in the final product, but they just want them there for the drawing. And so, you know, I mean, it seems like he has an okay job, you know, like he's drawing pictures for a living. Come on, man. Why so glum, Galligan?
Well, it is like a crazy building, which we see. It's like a smart building.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's like electrified. It is a weird kind of callback to the first movie where his dad was an inventor and everything was kind of souped up in his house.
Right.
I'm just realizing this now as we're talking about it, but you know, he had all these gadgets and gizmos that didn't quite work properly, you know, trying to improve their house growing up. And now he's in a building that's essentially that, like it's got all these things that are supposed
issues.
To. Yeah. The whole building is a daddy issue, but it's kind of the same thing. Like nothing quite works. The like, you know, the revolving doors are like motorized and people are getting flung across the room. Like, and this is pre Gremlin. Like this is just
right.
shitty inventions.
Like, we have nothing to do here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because the whole like Gremlin mythology, I think is based on like reports of like malfunctioning planes in World War II. Wasn't that it? That like,
yeah. And there's like histories of like, you know, folk creatures, folk tales about creatures in certain industries, like in mining and you know, all of those things. And they cause troubles and they're the ones that, you know, cause the accidents where people die.
But that's what's funny about this movie, because it's like the building's already malfunctioning.
They probably have 3 to 5 dead people a week.
You're right. Yeah. And this is, so if anything, you know, throw some gremlins in. The gremlins might help.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah. But so Galligan, he finds out that Gizmo is in the building because this messenger guy, he comes whistling Gizmo's tune, you know, the...
I don't remember how it goes.
That's pretty close. This messenger is Tuco from Breaking Bad.
Yeah, that's crazy. And then at the end of the movie, Dean Norris shows up.
Yeah, they both heard New Batch and they got the wrong idea.
Oh, yeah. If they ever reboot Breaking Bad, I hope they also call it Breaking Bad, the New Batch. Yeah, Tuco. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Also, he's great. I just saw him. I watched Training Day, and he's in that, basically playing a very Tuco-esque character. He's great.
So good. And he's great in playing the same part in Better Call Saul. So,
yeah.
Like, he almost gets more to do in that.
Mm-hmm. Everybody does. Everybody sure. does. Oh, and I was looking at this because I almost messed it up when I was looking for trivia questions. The guy who plays Mike Ehrmantraut is in the first Gremlins movie, but not the second.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, there's so many cameos in this movie. But Zach Galligan, he's got to go rescue his Giz. So he goes and he does that, and he grabs him and he puts him in his filing cabinet. But then he has to go on this date with his boss, which is problematic. And they go to this Canadian restaurant.
Yeah, we're going to have to stop here and spend about 35 minutes talking about everything in this Canadian restaurant.
I thought the chocolate mousse was a thing that I would just have more of. I would have some of in my adult life. I expected it to be on every menu.
Wait, but is like chocolate mousse?
Yeah, but it's not shaped like a mousse.
Yeah, but is it not a thing in the U.S.?
I mean,
was that
it is.
A joke? It is.
I think
right?
they're just making the pun about it being like a mousse because he's okay. like have an antler. Oh, and that actor who plays the waiter in the outfit is from 6 Feet Under. He plays Ruth's coworker. But anyway,
but there,
so
yeah,
many
all the,
good actors.
All the waiters are dressed like Mounties, and Zach Galligan's drinking a Molson Canadian. And I love that they're playing Gordon Lightfoot in the restaurant, too.
It's perfect. And it's exactly like all Canadian restaurants.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if you go to like a Kelsey's or like a corporate owned restaurant, it still looks exactly like that.
Yeah.
Even if it's a nice Italian restaurant, it's still all the waiters are dressed like Mounties. And
but
it's
I feel
just
like
that one Gordon Lightfoot song.
In maybe like in places like in America, there probably are Canadian themed bars which are kind of like that. You know, or restaurants. Like,
I don't know.
I can sort of believe it.
I think I've seen that joke elsewhere, too. Like, is that... I'm going to look that up. I feel like I've seen that on another okay. show. Keep going.
All right. Well, so everything is fine, but he has to have his girlfriend, Kate, look after Gizmo and get him from his filing cabinet. Except, in the meantime, Gizmo... I almost said something that wouldn't have sounded right. Gizmo gets water on him through an incident involving Frank Gorshin.
No. Wrong Riddler.
Oh, fuck. Sorry.
It was John Astin.
Yeah, John Astin as this surly janitor, who's pretty hilarious. But he accidentally gets water on Gizmo, and you know what happens. You know the rules of Gizmo. You can't get water on him. You can't feed him after midnight. And, you know, so he multiplies. He sprouts these like four other Gizmos. There's one with like buck teeth and googly eyes. And there's another one with just googly eyes. They're all a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But then Phoebe Cates, she takes home the wrong Mogwai. And it's all trouble from there. You got any update on this?
No,
Canadian restaurant.
I can't find it. I feel like, yeah. I mean, write to us or tweet at us at Rewatchability if you can remember another movie or TV show where there's like a joke Canadian restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Or if you know a place where I can get a chocolate mousse shaped like a mousse.
Yeah. Or a poutine shaped like Pierre Trudeau.
Or Justin Trudeau.
No, I don't want that one. No. I don't want any of them. I don't want any food shaped like a Trudeau.
Yeah.
I'll just have poutine shaped like poutine. I don't even like poutine. You know what? Forget the whole thing.
All right. But yeah. So now there are more Mogwai, and you know what's going to happen. Like, they're eventually going to eat something after midnight, and they do, and they turn into the gremlins, and then it's all trouble from there. And, like, the big thing is they're in New York City. If these gremlins get out, they're going to have the time of their lives, you know? And it'll be a big, it'll be a disaster. So they want to prevent that from happening. But a whole bunch of crazy shit happens. Like, this is where it starts going, like, off the wall. As soon as the gremlins are introduced, everything goes absolutely bonkers. Like, first of all, these gremlins, they don't just stay regular gremlins. No, they go to Christopher Lee's lab, and they get a whole bunch of different solutions that make them... enhance them in various ways. Like, there is the smart talking gremlin,
voiced by Tony Randall.
Yeah, pretty hilarious. And also got some pipes. Also, a spider gremlin. There's a bat gremlin and electricity gremlin. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, when I was a kid, again, I think I saw this one first, so all of this made sense to me. Like, it was probably...
Hey, where's Bat Gremlin?
Yeah, it was probably weirder for me as a kid going back and watching the first one and seeing that they were just normal gremlins. Like, there were no super smart ones. So, watching the Key and Peele sketch, like, I can get why that would
When's
be funny.
When's the film gonna break?
Yeah. But you can get why that would be funny, because they're, like, a little bit older than us. So I can see why you would think that was so... crazy.
Yeah, that's but I fair. Mean, like, we definitely shouldn't have seen this movie when it came out. Like, we were 6 or 7.
Yeah, it was, even then. I mean, and also, like, we talk about the first one being, like, more violent or darker. I will say, like, there are obviously more comedic moments and broader moments, but I would say this movie is just so insane that there are also scarier moments and grosser moments. Like, I'm thinking about early on, kind of where we are in the movie, when the gremlins are first attacking, like, there's that scene where Phoebe Cates is in the elevator, and all, like, their arms are, like, breaking through and grabbing her. And
that's
then
scary.
There's nothing in the first movie.
And they're grabbing her legs. It's, like, vaguely, I don't know, sexual.
Almost. Well, I mean, I think there is a sexual component to the gremlins that we need to unpack maybe in the second half. But, I mean, there definitely is. I mean, look at what happens with Robert Picardo. Yeah. But also, I think there's a lot of violence in the first movie, but I don't think anything is quite as gnarly or gross as the scene where one of them attacks John Glover and he lowers it into, like, the paper shredder.
Yeah.
And it just gets ground up into this, like, guacamole of gremlin.
I did want to dip chips in it. Yeah, but that's almost, like, gross out, but almost, to me, not scary. I don't know how I would have felt as a kid. But
I don't know. And also, I say, like, this is way later, but, like, the spider gremlin scene, I think that's as scary as anything in the first movie.
Also, I'm still a little bit terrified by the gremlins when they're about to multiply and you see them transparently through the other gremlins' backs. That's creepy.
Oh,
I don't
that's
like
gross.
That.
Yeah. Also, the one that looks like Leonard Maltin.
Yeah.
Oh, can we talk about that scene for a minute?
Yeah, the Leonard Maltin scene?
Yeah.
Well, you know, while they are running amok, and this is also a TV station, which is part why it's like Ted Turner, they go on this sort of Leonard Maltin show, and Leonard Maltin is giving a shitty review of the Gremlins VHS tape.
Which is the first moment where it, like, breaks the fourth wall, it's like, because we didn't talk really about the Warner Brothers cartoon at the beginning.
No, and we definitely should have. But, I mean, yeah, it does open with a cartoon. And, you know, it's not necessarily part of the movie, but it also bookends it at the end. So it sort of is encapsulated within this, like, cartoon framework.
Well, it kind of is, because, like, so I bought the DVD for this, or the Blu-ray, because I wanted to... Because
you were ashamed for not owning it already?
I wanted to have it, yeah. Sure. I don't even have the first one on DVD, but I have the second one. But I was watching some of the extra features, and there is a much longer version of the Looney Tunes opening where they, like, look up, like, Daffy's like typing Gremlins 2 on a computer or something. So it kind of foreshadows the computer stuff, but also, and it was all like written and directed by Chuck Jones.
Mm-hmm.
But they cut it because Joe Dante said that audiences were confused as to whether or not this was actually the movie.
Right.
But he also said like the reason why they put that in the beginning was, for one thing, as like a callback to when, you know, Looney Tunes shorts would precede the feature mm-hmm. film, but also it kind of like called its shot a little in terms of like the movie is saying yeah. like, hey, we're basically making a Looney Tunes cartoon,
it
but with Gremlins.
You.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it is kind of important. And I think like, yeah, we have that stuff at the beginning, and then we have a lot of stuff that could kind of fit nicely with the first Gremlins movie. But then mm-hmm. as soon as we come to the Leonard Maltin scene, it definitely zigzags and it starts to take off in a whole other direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Leonard Maltin gets attacked by the Gremlins, and he really did give a bad review of the original Gremlins. So, I mean, yes. It was sort of big of him to come onto the set, and big of Joe Dante to have him as well.
Well,
maybe not.
I remember hearing Leonard Maltin talk about it years ago.
Uh-huh.
First of all, I've got to say, I love Leonard Maltin. Like, I grew mm-hmm. up, like so many people our age, with the Leonard Maltin guide.
Right. Every time you went to the bathroom.
Every time I went to the bathroom, I had a tattered copy.
Some
no
of your
joke.
Best movements.
And I recently, because after watching this movie, I ordered a new, like the most recent edition of the Leonard Maltin guidebook, because I would like that to be in my bathroom now.
Nice.
But I do love Leonard Maltin. Like, I've heard him on a lot of podcasts, and I know he has a podcast, and
yeah,
Leonard Maltin's great. But I remember hearing him talk about this years ago because, you know, Joe Dante is not just a director. He's a real, like, film historian. And
absolutely.
And he used to be a critic himself. So I remember Leonard Maltin saying that him and Joe Dante became friends, basically. And, you know... As a film critic, I don't think Leonard Maltin felt especially comfortable having a lot of like filmmaker friends because
right.
his job is to critique their work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when it came time to review Gremlins, I remember him saying something to the extent of like he felt very uncomfortable because he did not like it and gave it a bad review. But then what happened was his friend Joe Dante years later was like, hey, let's do a scene where we put you in the movie giving your bad review for Gremlins, and Maltin went. And incidentally, Leonard Maltin gave a good review to Gremlins 2, the
yeah.
movie he is in, which, I don't know, maybe recuse yourself? How is he allowed to do that?
Yeah, and I think like even in the original review, he has like a cheekily, there are some extraneous cameos or something like that. Superfluous cameos.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, but it is great. And it also, it does set the movie off the rails because everything goes amok. Like, the Gremlins are screwing up everything. And, like, at one point, the film melts away and the Gremlins start doing shadow puppets against the screen of the
yeah.
theater that I'm not even in.
Well, you know, I watched this movie. I watched it in my basement, and I projected it. And so I feel like
that scene
played well. And I don't know.
I'm jealous.
I must have seen it on YouTube or something in the years since. But, like, that scene where the projector breaks down and, well, we should describe the scene because the projector breaks down and the Gremlins start doing shadow puppets. And mm-hmm. then there's, like, a whole scene where, like, the mom comes out and complains.
Yeah.
And who's that actress? Because I know she was also in Amazon Women on the Moon. I remember that, which Joe Dante directs some of the segments. I can't remember her name. But then she goes and complains to like the theater manager, who's played by Paul Bartel.
Belinda Belaski.
That's it. She complains to Paul Bartel, and then he goes and gets Hulk Hogan to like deal with it.
Yeah, it's so so crazy. And yeah, I mean, the Hulk cameo is so wacky, and he just sort of like, yeah, he just gives him like the spiel, and then the movie starts up.
We have gremlins in the projection. Could you help us?
Gremlins? In this theater? Now?
Okay, you guys, listen up. People paid good money to see this movie.
When they go out to a theater, they want cold sodas, hot popcorn, and no monsters in the projection booth. Do I have to come up there myself? Do you think the Grimsters can stand up to the Hulkster? Well, if I were you, I'd run the rest of Gremlins 2 right now. Sorry, folks. It won't happen again.
Did you watch the VHS version, like the version they included on video?
I didn't have time, no.
It's basically like the video starts getting staticky, and then it's like the Gremlins are in a shootout with John Wayne. Like they edit them into a John Wayne movie, basically.
They kill John Wayne, and nobody's sad because he was a racist.
Pretty much.
No, yeah, I didn't see it, but I read about it. I wonder, like, what they would do now, like, if they updated it for like, today's thing.
I mean, the movie version, the movie theater version, is much better. So I'm glad it's been restored for Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, plus you get the Hulk cameo, you know.
And, yeah, more residual checks for Hulk.
Yeah. You can take down another website or whatever. But Billy eventually gets Clamp, the, you know, billionaire head of the company, and they start concocting a plan to stop the Gremlins from getting out, and then B, kill all the Gremlins. And so what they want to do is they want to change the clocks and trick the Gremlins into thinking it's midnight when it's like, you know, 9 o'clock. I bet that works with kids. But and then they'll all congregate, and then they'll, you know, expose them to the sunlight. And then, remember, Gremlins don't like sunlight. They will all die. It's a whole thing. Like, he has to go outside in his special... He has, like, a special exit with, like, an elevator that pops up under a tree planter. I thought that was pretty neat.
Oh, man. And we didn't even mention the fact that Dick Miller shows up again.
Well, exactly. Yeah. The Futtermans are in New York City. See some shows, maybe see Phantom, maybe see Cats, and see Billy. But he is like PTSD'd from the Gremlins. And, you know, it sounds like he's had a really hard time. Like, they're saying, like, oh, he's okay to, like, come out into the city. And they're like, yeah, he's you know, it'll be good for him.
Well,
it'll
already had PTSD because he was, like, in the first movie, he was, like, the connection to that, those stories of, like, World War II fighter jets.
Right.
Because that's where, that's like, he coined the term Gremlins in the first movie, if I'm
right.
not mistaken.
Oh, referencing that.
So obviously he's in like every Joe Dante movie. So they had to, he comes back to visit Billy, like a kid he knew in the town. Like, it's not his dad. It's not his family. And then
didn't he drive the garbage truck or something?
Yeah. And then, that was The Burbs, I think.
Oh, shit.
Another movie I love, by the way. You guys did that on the podcast, and I wasn't on it. And The Burbs is great. Earlier in the pandemic, my brother-in-law was going to show my nephew The Burbs.
Oh, man.
Because they're
terrifying a kid out of his mind for the first time.
Well, he's like 12. I think he's or 13 now. But they were, he doesn't live in Toronto anymore, but he came down to go to Bay Street Video and to buy a copy of The Burbs. And he told us that, and I was like, hey, pick us up a copy too. So he got two copies of The Burbs Blu-ray and dropped one off for us, and I rewatched it, and it's terrific.
It's a great movie.
And
Henry Gibson is in, that's his name, right?
Yeah, Henry Gibson. He shows up here too, yeah.
He has a little cameo. And, I mean, he still looks terrifying. I still get the chills when I see him, even though
totally.
He's like, you know, he's like the peon in the situation. But so good.
He even scares me in Magnolia. He's like that barfly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Dick Miller shows up. He's supposed to stay with Zach Galligan and Phoebe Cates, but like they're having marital issues. So they tell him to go away. And they're like, all right. And they just like pick up their 18 suitcases and walk out the front door. I was like, man, I would be so upset if I were the Futtermans.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But then again, they don't owe him nothing. They're not family.
That's true.
But Futterman, I mean, he comes through. He gets through his like PTSD. He kills like the Bat Gremlin. Or I mean, he at least like douses it in cement, and then it goes and becomes a
gargoyle.
Yeah. Yeah, which is really cool. And yeah, and then he goes into the building and is, you know, ready to kick some ass. And yeah. And then, oh, there's also, I forgot to mention, there's Robert Prosky's character, who's like the Herman Munster-esque television host.
Well, he's more like you know, I don't know if we had this so much in Canada, but I know in the U.S. they all kind of had like their local TV horror personalities. I mean, here we had the hilarious House of Frightenstein, but in the States, like they would all have these kind of horror personalities who showed horror movies late at night and, you know, would kind of comment on them or, you know, host them basically. And, and this, like, Sven Gulli was one. I know.
Right.
And this was seemed like kind of a love letter to those guys or that aspect of pop culture. And it was such a beautiful story too, because like he gets the most kind of moving arc of the whole movie, because like
it's the emotional core.
Yeah, because he says at the beginning to Zach Galligan that he went into broadcasting not to be like a horror host, but because he wanted to be a reporter. And he never got the chance. And then he gets the chance by reporting on the gremlins attacking the building, because no other reporters are in the building. And it is kind of sweet.
And he does it all in the Dracula costume, which is sweet and hilarious.
And Robert,
and he also,
Robert Prosky, he also, I just got to say, another movie I rewatched in the pandemic that I think I mentioned earlier in another episode was Thief.
Mm.
And that was his first movie.
Whoa.
Because I think he was a stage actor. He was like in his 40s in Thief. And he is so scary in that movie.
Oh.
Just one of the best movie villains of all time, Robert Prosky in Thief. But he's also, you know, he has the capacity to be very sweet and avuncular, which is partly what makes the turn in Thief so effective. I just love him and think he's great here.
To you, live. Exclusively over the Clamp News Channel, from the lobby of the Clamp Center building, where this invasion by strange creatures, perhaps from another galaxy or from a dimensional warp, has run riot throughout this building, sending hundreds of people fleeing for their lives.
He's so great, yeah. Yeah, so much of this movie, I mean, it sort of abandons the main characters almost in a way. I mean, yeah, they're there and they are, you know, sort of doing their thing, and they have some like relationship stuff to work through because of Zach going to this Canadian restaurant with this with his boss. But not cool. But for the most part, like, it follows like the gremlins just destroying things. Like, it really like lets loose, and it really goes like anywhere. But eventually Zach, Billy, he gets, at one point, he captures the electricity gremlin in the phone. Oh, yeah, so the sun plan isn't going to work because it's cloudy. So nobody checked the weather. They didn't have the weather channel at the time. I don't know. But so that plan's not going to work. So plan B, they have to get the electricity gremlin, which Billy trapped in the phone by just holding the phone up to it.
Sure.
I don't know how it converted to audio or whatever. I don't know. But okay. Suspension of disbelief. He gets everybody to soak all the gremlins, who are at this point doing like a huge musical number. They're doing, you know, at least the third best version of New York, New York after Frank Sinatra and Liza Minnelli. And they get all of these gremlins soaked, so they're, like, multiplying, and, you know, there's more gremlins popping up, and Dick Miller's like, I hope you know what you're doing, kid, because, you know, he doesn't like these gremlins. But so they're all in the lobby, and then water conducts electricity. Mm. So the electricity gremlin is on hold, and he takes it off hold, and then he electrifies all of the gremlins and they die. And like the smart talking one who has a conscience and possibly even a soul, he dies.
I guess they all have souls because he was just the one that was imbued with the ability to speak.
Well, I don't understand. Okay. I mean, I don't know whether people are born good or evil. but why is there one good Mogwai, and for every one good Mogwai, there's like 10 evil Mogwai, you know? Like, what's the deal?
I mean, I think it's the same ratio as humans, right?
I guess that's about, yeah, it sounds about right, now that I think about
Well, also, the other thing we haven't mentioned is that, because as Key and Peele would have us believe, there was one female writer in the room, there is a lady gremlin who wants to marry Robert Picardo.
Right.
And
yeah.
And the movie kind of ends with him being like, well, let's go for it. I mean, it's kind of like the Some Like It Hot ending.
Exactly.
Where he's like, nobody's perfect. Mm-hmm. It's a gremlin.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's troubling.
I love Robert Picardo. I think he's hilarious in this movie.
Oh, he's great.
And yeah, that, I mean, I also think, maybe we should talk about this in the second half, but I do think that the theme of the gremlins perhaps representing this sort of repressed libidinous aspect of the human psyche comes out in this movie. I think it's carried over because, okay.
So when things go wrong in like mechanical things, it's because people are horny?
Yes. That is always sense. The case. My internet went out earlier today, and I was like, who is horny at the internet
TMI.
Company? No, but I think, I mean, you know, in the first movie, I think a lot of people have attached different meanings to the gremlins. I mean, we probably talked about this when we did the earlier podcast, but like, it's also been called like one of the most racist movies because, you know, it's about this sort of very white community that gets terrorized by this race of dark skinned creatures who, you know, don't subscribe to their sort of white suburban norms. And I don't think that was intentional necessarily. Like, I see it more from like this sort of psychosexual standpoint. And I know I kind of sound like the like Institute of Gremlins 2 Studies Twitter even saying that, but like I do think like there's something in the first movie where it's like very much about like these two young characters, and I think
follow these rules or there will be all this reproduction happening.
Well, that's totally it. And it's not just that. It's like at the end, like, you know, the Mr. Wing character comes back and is like, you were not responsible enough to like look after
you're not
something.
Ready for a baby.
Yeah, no, totally. And so I think like that's in the first movie to a certain extent. And I think that does crop up again here because what creates the gremlins is Zach Galligan's willingness to go along with his boss's sort of adulterous advances. Because, I mean, he's not married to Phoebe Cates, but like, you know, he's kind of going behind her back and going for dinner with his boss, who he is not interested in perhaps, but is going to dinner with knowing that she has her eyes on him. You know what I mean? Like that's the moment that leads to all of the other, all of the gremlins coming out is this act of sexual betrayal or romantic betrayal. And again, it's like, I mean, it ends with him being able to retain possession of Gizmo. But I think there is the implication that the responsibility of having a romantic relationship or a sexual relationship is not to be taken lightly and has consequences. And sometimes negative consequences.
There will be electricity gremlins.
I mean, I think that's...
Watch where you put your willy!
I think that's just baked into like the core. That's like the baseline of the Gremlins universe. But then there's all
Very
of these antics on top.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. Okay, well, let's just wrap it up. I mean, the gremlins are dead. Clamp has a change of heart. He's going to use Billy's small town design for some thing that he's doing in New Jersey. And that's it. That's Gremlins 2, the new batch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll take a short break and we'll be back with some behind the scenes and the trivia. So don't go away.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Rewatchability. We are talking about Gremlins, the 1990 movie starring Howie Mandel. I sort of forget that he's involved in this, but he had like a bit of a career as like a, you know, a weird voice guy for a bit.
Gremlins 2, by the way. You just said Gremlins.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Gremlins 2, : the new badge.
Thank you. Yeah, I wonder if Howie Mandel had any notes about that Canadian restaurant.
Oh, yeah. Well, his notes were probably like, don't touch me. And Deal or No Deal? I don't know.
Yeah.
Remember Bobby's World?
Of course.
I liked that show when I was a kid.
I tried to show it to my kids recently, but...
Oh, wow.
It was like, it's on Amazon Prime, but like the quality was really bad and they just complained about how old it looks, so we turned it off after 5 minutes.
Oh wow. Well, yeah, I remember his mom had the, you know, used to say like, don't you know, all the time. And before I saw Fargo, that was the Bobby's World's mom accent, and now it's the Fargo accent.
Right. No, it's the same character. That's his Bobby's mom is Marge Gunderson.
Oh my God, that's who she's pregnant with.
Yeah, it's
she's
prequel.
Pregnant with Bobby.
It's a
in
prequel
Fargo.
To Bobby's World.
Oh my God. The Coen brothers' Bobby World is, wow. Okay. So I have some trivia for you.
I'm a little nervous about this, I got to say, because this movie is so crammed full of like jokes and cameos and references that I feel like I should know.
Yeah.
I was trying to prepare for this. I watched, like I said, I got the Blu-ray, and one of the features is like the making of Gremlins 2, the new batch. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'll watch this and there'll be lots of information in it. And I watched it and it was only 6 minutes and it was made at the time. And it's just like, it provides no information about the making of the movie. It's basically like a joke featurette about how like Gizmo is a real actor and he's like very demanding on set. And like it purports that like the Gremlins are real actors, and it was not informative at all.
That's I'm sorry. Yeah, I mean,
but I will try my best.
You know, sometimes these trivia questions are just to sort of shoehorn a lot of sort of, you know, bonus information into a small little, you know, soundbite. So
okay,
it's okay if you get them wrong.
No, it's not. But...
No, it's not. But okay, so this one's really tough, and you should be ashamed if you don't know it, because it means that you don't know cinema.
Okay.
This movie features a cameo by Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
And you may say it even launched his brief Hollywood career. So, JM, can you name three other movies featuring Hulk Hogan?
Oh, God.
Harry Hulk Hogan.
Well, yeah.
Now, don't get it confused with Paul Hogan. That's Crocodile Dundee. It's not in that.
Of course I can name three movies with Hulk Hogan.
Okay.
There's Mr. Nanny.
Okay.
Santa with Muscles.
Okay.
No Holds Barred.
Yeah, that's right.
Suburban Commando, is that one?
That's the other one that I have written down. Okay. Yeah, that's good. You got all four that I had bothered to write down. Yeah, No Holds Barred was actually before... this, so you already had a little bit of Hollywood sort of going there, but I remember Hulk Hogan being like a big actor. You know, they tried to like make him an Arnold Schwarzenegger sort of fella, did not work. You know, and I thought for a while like that would be like The Rock's fate. He'd be like Hulk Hogan. The Rock, he's doing it. He's a better actor than Hulk Hogan, that's for sure.
Oh, it's not even close. Yeah, he's charming and. Yeah, he's a good actor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also, seems like a nice guy. Seems like a nice guy. Hulk Hogan, all that drink your milk shit was a total facade, and I guess I fell for it. Fuck you, Hulk Hogan.
Jesus.
Okay, so my second trivia question was, which two actors in this movie have played the same Batman villain in different Batman series? And you sort of already mentioned that.
Oh, because John Astin and John Glover both played the Riddler?
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
John Glover, I that's my favorite. Well, I do love Frank Gorshin also, but maybe my favorite Riddler is still the John Glover Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah, version. I mean, it's good. It's good.
Yeah, I love that.
I haven't seen it in a while, but I mean, everything about that show was so pitch perfect. You know?
Oh, he's great in it, his performance as the Riddler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's also, I mean, he was also Lex Luthor's dad in Smallville, so he has a lot of these comic book sort of...
I didn't watch Smallville.
Well, you don't have to. I mean, a lot of those actresses were in a cult, so, you know.
He's also, isn't he?
I don't know how that would change the experience.
He's in one of the Batman movies, isn't he?
He might be. One thing,
like Batman Forever in a deleted scene, or am I crazy?
He could be. One thing that I was surprised that he was in, because I love the show when it was on, but... you know, it didn't last very long, was Brimstone, where he played the devil.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, sorry. Pretty awesome. He's in Batman and Robin, and he is like a doctor. I think he works at Arkham or something.
Interesting. Oh, there you go. All right. Okay, so third question, and this is a toughie, okay. I think. Maybe not. I mean, you know a lot about movies. I would not know this if I didn't look at the IMDb trivia and Wikipedia. So, Robert Picardo references Bruce Lee to Mr. Wing, who is played by, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, Ki Luke. Name one of his sort of tentative connections to Bruce Lee.
Oh, his tentative connection?
Yeah. I mean, they were kind of in the same movie, one of the same movies, but some of the other connections are like a little, you know, a little bit more like, you know, Kevin Bacon-y.
Okay. Wow. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you. Okay. Please. First of all, he was the original Kato in the Green Hornet movies.
What?
Yeah. There was a Green Hornet movie, and he was Kato.
What, like a serial?
I don't know. It's on the IMDb. It's there. Yeah, it's probably like a serial or something like that.
Wow.
But he originated the role, which, of course, Bruce Lee would go on to famously portray in the series. And he actually showed up on an episode of the Green Hornet TV series in the 60s as well. So I thought that was pretty neat.
That's
the
amazing.
Second thing is he is a voice. He dubs one of the characters in Enter the Dragon, famous Bruce Lee movie.
He dubbed one of the voices?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, he did the voice, but he wasn't on screen. Somebody else was the actor on screen.
Okay.
And then third, and this one is also a little bit tentative, but I think it counts. He played Master Poe in Kung Fu, a series which was allegedly stolen from Bruce Lee.
Right, yeah, I did hear that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at his IMDb and his Wikipedia, and he had like a long, really interesting career. I mean, he was sort of first famous for playing Charlie Chan's son in all of those, you know, horribly racist Charlie Chan movies.
Right.
But, you know, he made a good career out of it. He was one of the founders of the Screen Actors Guild.
Wow.
Yeah. And this was one of his last movies. He was in Alice, which came out after this. But, you know, he passed away in 1991. So, I mean, so good. Obviously, the racial stereotypes in this movie and the Orientalism and everything is awful. But I hope this guy, you know, at least made bank, and he seemed like he had an awesome career. So,
oh, he's great, yeah. And I just looked it up. That Green Hornet movie he was in, it was a series of serials.
Cool.
Yeah. No. Yeah. He's great. He is. He's been in just tons of stuff. Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, just like, yeah, so many voices. He did voices also on like the on like a Spider-Man cartoon, and there was something else that I saw as well. But yeah, just like a, you know, a super great career. But yeah, sort of unfortunately represented here. But
You know, it was too bad also that, I mean, maybe it's for the best because the character was not written in the most culturally sensitive way, but it, having him kind of killed off screen at the beginning of the movie when he was such an integral part of the first one was a little unfortunate. But I mean, I was going to say maybe there's no way to kind of salvage that character, but like we said earlier, the sort of prequel series is going to try, I guess, to delve into that backstory.
Yeah, which I think is good. He said if they do a third Gremlins movie that he would like to be in a flashback. Of course, he passed away.
Aww.
But, you know, it seemed like he was, you know, enthusiastic about it.
He's good. You know, I like everybody in these movies. I like Zach Galligan. I love Phoebe Cates.
I forgot to mention... This is like random, but my ex-girlfriend used to have Zach Galligan as an acting teacher.
I remember
NYU.
You saying that. Yeah.
Yeah. And surprisingly, she didn't break up with me for asking too many Gremlins questions.
Was just like every acting lesson like, okay, you're in a scene. A gremlin's coming at you. Here's what you do.
Yeah, probably.
Like, Professor Galligan, what do we do if the scene isn't about a gremlin? I don't understand the question. Okay, so moving on. If it's a smart gremlin, if it's a gremlin with bat wings, here's what you do.
Yeah. His productions of Chekhov's The Cherry Orchard, though, are legendary.
Well, here we are in the chair. Oh, my God, a gremlin! Everybody look
at... We have to give up the cherry orchard. Ah! Yeah, it's classic. Yeah, yeah. Everybody is great in this. I mean, Joe Dante just clearly loves movies so much and loves making movies and loves actors. And I mean,
he is a,
sometimes
a crazy
it comes through.
Encyclopedia of movies. He is a maniac. He has seen so many movies and his mind is like a steel trap. I mean, I know he's not that old, but like, I mean, he will on his podcast, people will come on and mention some movie you've never heard of that's like some Czech movie from 1956 and they'll bring it up maybe with the hopes of stumping him and he'll be like, oh, well, the thing about that is it was released under 8 different titles and you know, and here's what happened to the lead actor. Like, oh my God, how do you remember all this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it shines through. Like, that's why like all like the cameos are great. That's why like him having his crew, Dick Miller and all those are great. And yeah, all like the connections to other movies. Like there are so many like references to things. I mean, there are references to things I didn't understand and then I would look them up and it would be like a reference to a movie. Like at one point there's a brain in a jar and it says something like, you know, I can't even remember. It says something like some name on it. So I looked up the name and it's a reference to some like 1950s movie, sci-fi, you know, the sort of movie that they would show on the Robert Prosky characters program.
Was it the brain that wouldn't die or something like that?
No. Wait, it's about a rich guy who they save his brain. Maybe that, does that ring a bell? Is that the brain that doesn't die?
I don't know. There's probably a bunch of brain movies.
People love brains. Yeah, well, I mean, this movie, it came 6 years after the original Gremlins movie, and Warner Brothers, who produced the first one, they immediately wanted a sequel because it was a huge success, there was, like, lots of merchandising, and Joe Dante had felt like he had wrapped everything up, he'd given Gremlins a proper ending, and he didn't want to do it, so... The studio moved on without him, and they started developing Gremlins without Joe Dante. And they went through a whole bunch of crazy ideas, like the Gremlins go to Vegas, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
That could be fun. They gamble. They go, they, you know, there's like a show.
Yeah, they go see Celine Dion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They sing Viva Las Vegas at some point.
I know these are all things that happened more than a decade later, but...
But they didn't go with any of those ideas, and eventually it came back around to Joe Dante, and he said, okay, well, I still don't really feel like there's any reason to do a sequel, but they gave him complete creative control, and he decided to basically, you know, use it to sort of spoof the original Gremlins and also movies in general, and just, you know, make it like this big crazy thing.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
is
I've heard,
what it is.
I've heard him talk about that too in interviews. And and that's exactly right. Like, he didn't see any reason to do it, and they tried to do it without him. I mean, it wasn't even like he had written Gremlins. It was Chris Columbus wrote Gremlins, but mm-hmm. he had obviously, you know, directed it and
he put a stamp on it.
Oh, totally.
Sure. I mean, I forgot that Chris Columbus had written Gremlins, because everything else that Chris Columbus has written is so, like, you know, smarmy.
Right, yeah. And so I think this way, yeah, he wasn't that interested in doing another one, and they tried to develop it without him, and it didn't work. So when they came to him and were like, you know, please make this movie, he had a lot of leverage, and he used all of it to make just an insane movie. I mean, it does poke fun at the original Gremlins. It even, like, pokes fun at, like, the merchandising of Gizmo and stuff at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Like, I still think there's some really good Gremlin stuff in here. Like, even, like I was saying, like, non-comedic stuff. Like, I think the scary parts are genuinely pretty upsetting, even though they're sandwiched in this completely bonkers movie.
Yeah, I mean, the movie works, like, on so many different levels. I feel like the story is good. I mean, it's not like there's not too much of it, but it really allows us to get, like, all these different storylines in. Like, there's Gizmo, who is sort of, like, you know, going through his own thing.
His arc is he becomes Rambo because he likes watching Rambo on TV.
Yeah. And that feels, like, very, like, true to, like, the 80s and 90s was, like, the imitation of, maybe just the imitation of Rambo.
Yeah, I guess a lot of things that. People. I'm also reminded of that movie, it's either called Game Over or Dial Code Santa Claus or a bunch of other things. But that's also about a kid who, like, has to become Rambo at the end to defeat the villain that was rumored to have been the inspiration for Home Alone. So
oh, really?
Maybe that also filtered into Gremlins 2. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. But Chris Columbus, he wasn't, he didn't write the screenplay for
no.
this. It was written by Charlie S. Haas.
Who,
I don't know if he's related to Lucas Haas.
I'm looking on an IMDb, and he is apparently some guy.
Yeah, yeah. I guess Chris Columbus was doing Home Alone at the time.
Yeah, he probably didn't feel the need to.
He was like, these Gremlins are a bit dark, you know? I mean, I thought it was fun at first, but maybe we should just torture some house robbers.
So he did later write another Joe Dante movie, which is one I've wanted to do on the show, on the podcast for a while.
Oh, which one?
And that's Matinee.
Oh, yeah! We should do Matinee. I remember seeing Matinee. At a matinee, believe it or not.
Yeah, so, no, I love that movie.
Appropriate.
Yeah, but it definitely seemed like the kind of thing where they brought in a less renowned screenwriter, and presumably a lot of his ideas were just shaped by what Joe Dante wanted to do, given this freedom that he had.
I think so. I mean, I think it was his idea to maybe put it all in the Clamp building and sort of have it
right.
for the most part sort of, you know, be almost like a bottle episode. Like, it all happens in that, like, one space. But yeah, I mean, I didn't look at his, did he do other stuff after Gremlins?
Not a ton. No, he did Matinee and then he did a TV show. But yeah, I mean, it does feel like, it feels like such a Joe Dante movie. I mean, the other kind of, like, sad irony about it is that, like, Gremlins 2 was, like, we talked about, this total Looney Tunes-esque,
right,
absurd story where he was given the free rein to kind of do this anarchic cartoon movie. And then years later, he made Looney Tunes Back in Action, mm-hmm. which, from what I can tell, he did not have that at all. And it's right. not as good of a movie, though I do remember kind of liking it. But like when he actually got to do his Looney Tunes movie, he had far less freedom than he did by making a Gremlins movie that was secretly yeah. a Looney Tunes movie. Or,
yeah.
or inspired by that. I don't know. It's just kind of funny I like that he took these Gremlin characters and made something with them that spoke to his sensibilities perhaps more than the first movie. I mean, they're so...
For sure.
In some ways, they're very similar, and in some ways, they're so different. I don't know. I kind of love them both for different reasons. I mean, even, like,
yeah.
this movie, like I say, it doesn't parody it in the sense that, like... I mean, by the end, it gets pretty crazy, but there are scenes early on where we're legitimately fearing the Gremlins, where the Gremlins are, like, a real threat and gross and everything that they were in the mm-hmm. first movie. But then, yeah, we do get, like, Leonard Maltin poking fun of the first movie, the movie itself breaking down. And then, I mean, maybe...
There's the Phoebe Cates.
That's what I was going to say, well. Yeah. Like, that yeah. is, like, one that I could see maybe turning off people that are super fans of the first movie. But I thought that joke was so funny when I first saw it.
I honestly didn't remember about the scene in the first movie.
Yeah. You know,
about her speech in the first movie. So, yeah, I mean, it just seemed like super weird. But also, Abraham Lincoln was one of the shadow puppets they made earlier. Also, one of the Gremlins, like, exposes herself to her. But, of course, Gremlins don't have genitals, so it doesn't seem, like, super icky.
Was that I couldn't remember. Was there a flasher Gremlin in the first movie, or was that just this movie?
I don't remember, but it's definitely in this movie. But then that's what she says happened on Abraham Lincoln's birthday.
Right.
Seems like re-traumatizing. A little cruel, Joe. Yeah.
I'm looking up, I'm trying to find if they're in the first movie, and I just searched Flasher Gremlin, and I got a $700 prop replica of the Flasher Gremlin.
Wow. That doesn't seem necessary. It was in one scene, yeah. and...
No, it is in the first movie, yeah. too. Yeah, that's because... I thought that because that's like also like it's Phoebe Cates also overcoming the trauma of the first movie by
right.
like, cause she's like, you know, when that gremlin comes out and flashes her again, she's like, I'm not putting up with this shit again. And she just kicks it across the room.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe this is a good place to talk about the sexuality of the gremlins a little bit more. Cause there is that lady gremlin.
Yeah, no, totally. I think that is like the core of what the Gremlins represent. I mean, I think it ultimately between the two movies gets a bit muddled and gets a bit unfocused in terms of like what is the actual allegory here? Because in the first movie, you can see like it's this kind of insulated small town. They're kind of like, you know, it's not just that they want to make a Christmas movie. Is they're making a Christmas movie because they're poking fun at like the Americana of, you know, the small town, the mythic small town of like, It's a Wonderful Life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there are a lot of, you know, meanings you can attach to that, you know, in terms of like how that sort of insulated, mostly white community is disrupted, you know, not entirely white. Obviously, there are black characters in the first movie, but I can see why people would perhaps see it as like as either being a racist movie or a movie about racism, even. But like for me, I think of it more in terms of like it's just about repression. It's about like it's about this kind of like American mode. This old-fashioned American mode of like living your life under a certain code where, you know, and if you don't abide by that code, if you don't abide by like the rules or mores of society, then this like anarchic, you know, primal id that is the Gremlins can escape and will just like, ruin everything. And I think there is something about like the moralizing that happens at the end of the first Gremlins movie that really speaks to that. And I think the second movie comes close to that, like I said, with, the sort of near affair that Zach Galligan has. But it's mm-hmm. also like, they poke fun so much at like 80s society. It's about like, the ridiculousness of like the frozen yogurt and cable TV mm-hmm. generation, and how like and how is that denying this kind of base humanity, which is violence and instinctively awful, and what happens when that just erupts in this explosion of insanity.
That all relates to what Tony Randall is saying on the talk show, about the Gremlins being like, wanting a society, wanting Susan Sontag.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, by the end of it, they're all sentient creatures. Like a lot of them have like t-shirts and clothes and
they're getting tattoos or whatever. Yeah.
So no, I don't know. I do think that the Gremlins are when it comes down to it, I think they're about like repression. They're about like the things that we try to hide from the world that may even be inside of us. And I think and that might be Tony Randall sometimes.
Right. Oh my god. Oops. Yeah. I think I buy that. That makes a lot of sense to me. The whole transformation of like the Mogwai into the Gremlins, like once you break these like rules, that seems like so, like the way that society responds to like sex,
I can see it like I see it differently now that I have kids and I love my kids dearly, but like they are a handful and they are crazy and like
a bunch of Gremlins, if you will.
They're less destructive than Gremlins, but like I can see it is ultimately about like about like responsibility and keeping things in check or else they can get out of control. I can see it as like this like birthing narrative also. It's just a silly story about Gremlins and it is a lot of fun too. Yeah,
I mean, it exists on both levels, like, really well, It's definitely not, like, a didactic movie about libidinous urges or about responsibility or about children. It's, like, a fucking crazy movie about, like, New York and the media and all of that stuff. And the way that, like, I think just, like, the way that people were receiving media in, like, the 80s with, like, so many options. Like, at the end, Gizmo is asking about, like, whether they have Nick at Night and HBO, So, I mean, this movie, Jam, why don't you tell me whether you thought Gremlins 2 was rewatchable?
Oh, yeah. No, it's totally rewatchable. I had a blast watching it. I mean, it's not perfect, but its faults, if it has faults, I think it's that it's too much movie. Like,
yeah,
it really swings for the fences and
it revels in itself a little bit.
Totally.
But it's great.
Yeah.
It's joyous.
And I love it. And even just like, the tactile nature of the Gremlins. I mean, I don't want to just get caught up in the like nostalgia of loving practical effects, because that's what it was like when I was a kid, and that was a time when life was left less hectic. But I think there is something about like the physical presence of the Gremlins, and even like I happened to be listening to an episode of Joe Dante's podcast recently where he was talking about that very thing and talking about like how in movies now, like the best special effects are usually like a hybrid of CGI and practical effects. And he was saying like, mm-hmm. If I were to make Gremlins now, like I would still use puppets, but the puppetry would be so much better because you could just digitally erase the puppeteers. Like you wouldn't have to be awkwardly hiding them off camera all the time. So I think there is something about like the Gremlins being there in that physical space that you can really feel. I mean,
Yeah, and they're like slick. They're gross.
They're
gross.
And there are things that are dated about the movie. I mean, one thing we didn't talk about is like Robert Prosky ropes the like Japanese tourist into becoming his cameraman because
another Asian stereotype.
Yeah, they just swapped one for another. But like, yeah, that was like a running gag in the early 90s. I remember that.
I guess we got to give this guy a prequel series too.
And it was the guy from UHF.
Yeah, and also from 16 Candles. That's Long Duck Dong.
Is it? I don't know if I've ever seen all of 16 Candles.
I haven't seen it, but I mean, that's what he's best known for. And
well,
also,
I know him from UHF, damn it.
Okay. Also in 16 Candles is Haviland Morris, who plays Marla Bloodstone in this movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I liked her. She was good.
Yeah, she's so saucy.
She is saucy. No, I think it was good. I like that she wasn't like...
Though Marla, another Trumpian name.
Well, yeah, at one point, like when she's caught in like the spider gremlin's web, it seems like, oh, they might just kind of like dispose of her like so many unlikable characters. But she actually becomes one of the heroes at the end. And
all right, we'll try this openness thing.
It's so, good. I think there are certain things that are dated. I think there's certain things that don't work. I don't like, and I don't know how much of this is like the looking back at this as like a Trump substitute, how much of that is like clouding my perception of this character.
Yeah.
But like, I wish to a certain extent that this movie had been harder on the John Glover character if he had been a tad more villainous.
Yeah, or if he like got some sort of comeuppance.
Exactly.
Or like, it's just frustrating because if all it took was releasing Gremlins into the White House and then Donald Trump would have a change of heart about everything, then, you know, yeah, feed him after midnight. Yeah, get some water on him.
Yeah,
I'll start the hose.
So like, I mean, it was a very gentle satire, I think, in terms of like the 80s corporate.
They don't address that he's, you know, tearing down all of these like, you know, nice old places and displacing people. Like
the end we're supposed to celebrate that he's displacing people.
It's just Billy got in on Billy. the
yeah,
cash,
exactly.
You know.
So I don't know. Like watching it now, I'm a little disappointed that it wasn't more of a, like you said, like he didn't have more comeuppance. But I mean, how can you not like this movie? It's such a joy to watch. It's full of wonderful character actors. It's never boring. Yeah, I think it's fantastic. What about you, Rob?
Well, I don't want to get attacked by gremlins. No, I love this movie. It was, I mean, it really did bring me back. I want to go and look for some photos of that old gremlin, of that old Gizmo doll. So it works on so many levels. All the stories are really good. The Gizmo storyline. I guess I care less about the Zach Galligan storyline, but I mean, it sort of just functions as like the spine of all the anarchy that the gremlins provide, and all the heart that little Gizmo has. And yeah, I mean, it's so fun. There are so many like weird things. It is a movie about. It's a movie where, like, you know, somebody who loves movies, Joe Dante, is clearly like reveling in his art and in like the history of his art, and it comes through. It's so fun. I mean, I didn't understand any of the references to older movies or anything when I was a kid, but it's just the love and the joy of all of that stuff, you know, really sort of like came through. And yeah, I think it's still a great movie. I mean,
I think there are probably like a bunch of references in the Christopher Lee lab that I'm sure I missed. Like at one point he walks in carrying like a pod from Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Like I recognize that.
And there's also, they play like the Dracula theme or whatever, apparently, because of course he famously played Dracula, and he says something when he sees the bat gremlin as well,
right.
I think. Yeah, I mean, it's stuff, it's packed, but it doesn't, like, ignore the other stories necessarily. Like, the Robert Prosky story, which, as I said, is the emotional core of this story, is, I mean, it's still given its time. Like, his character shouldn't be in this movie, like, by all rights, because you have the two protagonists. You have Gizmo, who is the third protagonist that is separated from Billy and Phoebe Cates for the whole movie. You don't need Robert Prosky, but Joe Dante puts him in here because he just loves that cinema and that era so much. And, you know, I think it gives it a little bit something extra that makes it really special.
Oh, totally. I think you're absolutely right. And it does feel like somehow he balanced it all. Like, it doesn't feel like one character is given too much attention over another. Like, it does feel pretty balanced. And even in terms of, like, Billy and I can't remember Phoebe Cates' character's name, but, like, Kate. I'm glad that, like, she didn't get less screen time than him. Like, she almost feel, I would, I would, if I had to guess, I would say that she got more screen time.
I kind of think
and
so.
And she's a better actress, I think, that with
whoa, I
with
mean,
apologies to the class that your ex took.
My ex was really good at pretending there was gremlins around.
If I could think of another Zach Galligan movie off the top of my head, was he in Waxwork?
I don't even know.
Was that him?
Oh, I don't know.
Is that the advanced class? If you have to, like, pretend you're being attacked by, like, wax dummies. Yeah, wax. Yeah, he was in Waxwork.
Waxwork.
Okay. He was also in Waxwork too. No, Zach. He's fine. He's good. I'm glad that I do like Phoebe Cates, and I'm glad she got more to do here. It's a great movie,
for sure.
Everyone should go watch Gremlins 2. The
do
new
it.
Batch.
Absolutely,
I didn't look into the
novelization.
Did you? Because I know that the Gremlins novelization had a bunch of crazy stuff in it, where there's an opening prologue describing, like, the alien overlord who is, like, sending gremlin aliens to Earth, or Mogwai to Earth, for some to, like, take over the planet one day or something crazy.
No,
okay.
I did not read about.
Well,
that.
I don't. That was the first one. I don't know if there's anything quite that divergent in the Gremlins 2 novelization, but
okay, all right.
We'll have to.
Yeah, I mean, you can have too much backstory, you know. You don't need to fill in all the details, people. Leave a little bit to mystery.
Yeah, like, is Hulk Hogan in the novelization of Gremlins?
Oh yeah, I don't know. That would be the Hulkster's literary debut, I'm sure.
Oh, I think he is.
Oh,
hold on.
The Hulkster tore his shirt. His muscles rippled in the light of the projector.
It's something like,
"You better run the next reel of Gremlins 2," the Hulkster spat.
I can't. Yeah, it says that scene somewhere in there. There's a used copy on Amazon for $30. Should I buy it?
Buy it. Patreon, sorry, you're footing this bill.
All right. No, that. I think we should end there.
Okay. So, rewatchable. That's rewatchability for this week. You can find us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you'd like to request a movie for us to talk about, you can email us at rewatchability@gmail.com, or if you go to our website, which is rewatchability.com, there is a link for a SpeakPipe thing, and you can leave us a little voice message, and we may even play your voice on the show. Your message on the show.
But if you are an electricity gremlin, we will not play it.
No, don't try to trick us. Also, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. And go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review if you like the show. Or if you don't want to do that, tell a friend. Or if you have some money, like your Daniel Clamp. Why don't you join the Patreon? You know, become a patron at the $2 million level. I think it gives you
it's the clamp tier.
You know, the clamp tier.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.